Welcome into the Fan Pregame here on SportsCenter and SportsCenter 590. The Fan, Alish and Justin back in action to kick off this week. We're going to have a big game three tonight. Florida and Edmonton on the network at 8 p.m. with a 7:30 pregame show. We've got the Blue Jays in action as well against St. Louis on the road. A later start around 7:30 tonight will be first pitch. And then we've also got a little bit of extra time for Justin and I at 7 o'clock on the SportsCenter 590 Fan radio-only block to go through quite a few things from the weekend.
I think your weekend. I think we're going through your weekend. I'm very excited to do that.
Yeah, I was at the NHL Draft Combine in Buffalo for the last couple of days with a couple of our colleagues. So some hard-hitting questions for the future NHLers.
Canadian Open, too.
Canadian Open yesterday, which went into four playoff holes. So lots to go through. And, of course, tonight's is PWHL Expansion Draft, which is a little later in the evening, around 8:30. So
that's Alish adjacent.
It is Alish adjacent because I'm still trying to figure out how this is fair.
Yeah, we'll get into that. It seems even more unfair than I even give it credit for.
Yeah, so I think it's shocking.
We'll get into that soon.
More and more. We're going to have two guests today at 6:30. Luke Gazdick will join us in studio. It'll be great to catch up with him. Maybe he'll bring us some more socks. We have his pair of socks here nicely visible. But we'll kick things off with Sean Reynolds, who joins us, our SportsCenter reporter covering this series. Sean, we appreciate you coming on. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
We're doing well. I can't believe that this series, I mean, first game one and two, could it really get much better than that? I'm feeling like the expectations are that every game is going to go to overtime or double overtime, and it's going to be just mind-blowing.
Yeah, there was a game in the 2022 Cup Final that I thought was the best game I'd ever seen played by a team before, by one team. The Colorado Avalanche had just had a dominant game where they just, you know, that you weren't allowed to touch the puck. They just had the puck. It was theirs. They were going to hold it for the, you know, I said there's supposed to be no such thing as a full 60-minute effort. That definitely was the best one that I'd ever seen. But that first period of game two, I don't know that I've ever seen a better period of hockey than that, given the two teams involved and how both were playing. It's a fascinating series because, you know, no lead is safe with either team. There's depth. There's different characters that are getting involved in this. There's the high-end stuff where you've got Connor McDavid, you know, and Aaron Ekblad said it, his McJesus moments out there. You've seen a couple of those in this series. And the other side of this is I think the goaltending has been phenomenal. I mean, it's funny to say that game two is a 5-4 score. I thought that Sergei Bobrovsky stole three, if not four, goals off the board in that game. And I think Stuart Skinner has been everything that he's been for the Oilers since they put him back in the starter's crease. So it's just kind of everything is firing on all cylinders. And every example of how you fight back, push back, win a hockey game is on display by both teams. Phenomenal hockey in a series that is 1-1, probably where it should be, because it could be 2-0 for Florida right now, and it could be 2-0 for the Oilers right now.
So great theater so far, as you outlined. Certainly it's living up to the expectation, maybe the greatest two Stanley Cup final games to begin a series of all time. You hang out regularly, though, Sean, in a very, very good barn. Winnipeg has a great barn. But I wonder for you what it was like when the Perry goal went in, when the McJesus moment happened. Like, they're having a lot of fun in Edmonton. It looks, I'm envious that I'm not there and able to experience it myself, but I'll resort to having to ask you, what's it like in there when something pretty spectacular happens?
Yeah, so I'm not the guy to ask about the Perry moment because we had headed down because we have to be ready to go in the room. So I was actually down in the bowels of the building and saw it in Gene Principe's studio on TV. Now, you could feel the building shake, but it's a well-built building, so the sound actually doesn't travel too well. But I've been in that building. I covered the conference finals last 2 years and the cup final in there the last 2 years. I've been there enough to know that building is absolutely phenomenal. If you want me to compare it to the whiteout in the Winnipeg,
no, we don't have to do that.
I don't know that anything I've seen before from a crowd has reached the moment where the Jets scored with 1.6 seconds left just because of the sheer madness of what happened there. But I mean, I'm not by anything taking it. That building consistently is amazing. And I think that Oilers fans really get it. Like when the team is down, they're good at picking the team up. You know, it's a hard building to get quiet. So they do an unbelievable job. I'm glad you asked about the McJesus moment. I take great pride in being a neutral journalist. So whoever I'm covering, I'm trying to cover it both ways. But one of the things that still gets me is when you see these moments that are absolutely jaw-dropping and astounding, I have a hard time not reacting to that because I'm such a massive fan of the game. And I was sitting with Mark Spector and Luke Fox, and he pulls that off, and Mark Spector throws himself back in his chair. Wow. He almost put a hole in the wall behind us. I turned to him with my eyes like this and kind of grabbed onto his jacket to be like, what did we just see? And Luke had the same response. And it's interesting because the Panthers box is right behind us, and Bill Zito and them are in there, and you don't want to look like you're cheering, and that's not what we were doing. I think what we were just doing was reacting to the sheer madness of what he pulled off, and like, did I just see what I saw? And so the reaction in the building at that time, I think by everyone, was just sheer wonder and amazement at what had happened there. It was funny. I actually shared a plane with Connor's dad on the way down here, and I'd asked him, like, do you, when those moments happen, do you just automatically hearken back to, well, is that the most amazing thing I've ever seen my son do? Is there something more and something that he actually had said that this very much reminded him of that very similar play in the conference finals against Dallas last year, where he pulled off an amazing goal in that building, same deal. But boy, oh boy, when that play doesn't just automatically resonate as the best play that a player has ever done, you know that that player has a Rolodex of amazement that he's pulled off in his career.
That's pretty fortuitous, you hanging out with Mr. McDavid on the way down. Yeah. Because
not for him. Not for him. I didn't shut up the whole time. He had to put up with me blabbing in his ear the whole time.
I actually can't imagine what it's like being the family of McDavid. Like, I know it's like affecting everyone, but if we're talking about like a true legacy moment, like this is kind of it for McDavid. Like, people have been, you know, outlining it as we go here. Maybe the greatest player that's never won a Stanley Cup, and it seems kind of silly because his career's right in the middle of it. But if you look at history, like, literally probably is the greatest player that's never won a Stanley Cup. So it feels like there's an immense amount of pressure on him, on Leon Draisaitl as well. You're, you know, conducting and part of all these interviews and these scrums. What's it like talking to those two? What stands out when they are meeting the media? I know you've covered them in the past. Has it changed at all? Like, just the seriousness and the importance of this and how that is sort of reflected in your conversations with them.
So let's start with the pressure. I think those two are absolutely feasting on it. Like, I think that they are gobbling that up for lunch. They are in it. And I think that's why you see them respond the way that they do in these big moments. I'd ask Connor the question when they'd eliminated the Dallas Stars, because, I mean, if you take a look around the league and in Toronto, there's a lot of people who have these conversations about Stars who don't show up at the time that you need them to show up, right? And you cannot say that about Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid. So I'd ask them kind of what they felt the psychology was that allows them to consistently do the kind of stuff that you're seeing on the screen right now at the very biggest moments. And I think just for them, they'd said these moments don't feel big to us anymore. They just feel like hockey. So all of us are out here, and hey, I mean, I get jazzed up every year. It doesn't matter who's in the cup final. When I'm going to games, I get jazzed up because I feel the pressure of what's happening on the ice. These guys are amazing where someone like me could never be, because they are able to handle these moments. And I think they've learned that. I think there was a time in their career that they probably suffered from that same thing. I just think right now, whether they win or lose, and hey, if they ended up losing, we'd say maybe the pressure got them, blah, blah, that's our job in the media. I don't think that would be it. These guys are going to put their best foot forward and do their best thing, because they just quite literally have got to a place where their heart rate is flat when everything is insane around them. And that's why you see them pull off that kind of stuff consistently.
We're chatting with Sean Reynolds ahead of game three tonight, Edmonton and Florida tied up 1-1. I want to ask you about a superstar on the other side of the ice, Barkov. Great quotes out of Paul Maurice today when asked about his stat line through two games. He's got zero goals, zero assists, and a -4. And he goes, well, we're trading him. And I know it's all tongue-in-cheek with Paul Maurice, but in I guess in a more seriousness matter, like, him and his line mate, Ryan Hart, have not been the story so far of this series. 39 goals in the regular season for Ryan Hart. He's only got one over the last nine games. Like, what can they do to not let that get into the narrative of them themselves. They've got a lot of hockey left to play. Like, how much do they need to impact the rest of the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, well, when you're talking about all-timers and all-timers, and, you know, you said McDavid may be the best player to not win a cup. I agree with that statement 100%. It's probably Paul Maurice was the best coach to not win the Stanley Cup. And you talked about that moment where he was asked about the struggles of Barkov and said, yeah, that's it, we're trading him. I don't think there's any coach that's better at taking the pressure off of his players, because he's just so captivating the way that he speaks and is able to take and make light of those moments. And right off the bat, you know, instantaneously, he makes it seem the idea of being upset with Barkov is just absolutely ridiculous. I like how Paul Maurice has characterized this series, in that it's just two amazing teams and amazing things are going to be done and amazing things are going to happen. And sometimes you're on the right side of that, and sometimes you're on the wrong side of that. And so right now they've got guys like Sam Bennett who are on the right side of that. They've got guys like Brad Marchand who are on the right side of that. I think Verhaeghe's done well. Clearly Nate Schmidt has found a new life in this series. And as I said earlier on, Sergei Bobrovsky, I think has just been absolutely phenomenal. I think these guys get it. They won a cup last year, went to the cup final the year before. I don't think any of them are sitting there and kind of stabbing themselves under the table with the fork that they're not getting the job done here right now, because they know it's just all about the team and wherever they can get to. So does Barkov want to be, I think, what is he, -4 or something mm-hmm. like that? And Reinhardt's not scoring the way he'd done before. I don't look at them and think that they've been absolutely atrocious on the ice. I just think that the Oilers are really, really amazing, and they are consistently given the hardest job in shutting down two of the most offensively explosive players of all time. Your stats probably aren't going to look good. You know, this is, if it's a diving competition, their degree of diving, they're going up and having to do triple, double, whatever flips. I'm not a diving guy. I'm going to blow that totally. Versus people who are, you know, like doing the little kid off the side of the pool thing in right now. So they've got the hardest job going on here against two guys who we just finished talking about, just are able to raise their level to the highest of levels. It's going to make them look bad. They're not looking bad if you're watching it. They're playing great hockey, and I'm sure that they're going to have their mark at some point on this series as well.
So you're prepping for a Maurice scrum or presser. I'm sure you got to be on your toes just a little bit. You got to be on your game if you're going to ask him a question, given what could be coming back. I imagine you're not feeling the exact same emotion when you got a Chris Knobloch scrum or presser, but you know, maybe you're expecting something from Maurice, and I guess you can fill your own blank there, but what are you expecting from Knobloch? What have you learned about Chris Knobloch in his short time here in the NHL in these big, big moments?
Well, I learned that I know nothing about predicting success of NHL coaches, because I thought he was a bad hire when the Oilers hired him. And I thought last year, covering him in the conference final and further on, Oilers fall down 3-0 in that series last year, and they come storming back to make it 7 games. And those 3 games that they play are the most dominant three-game stretch of hockey in NHL Stanley Cup final history. And I saw a whole bunch of little tweaks that he made around the ice to open up room for his players, to alleviate the pressure that the Florida Panthers are the best in the league at creating. This is not a guy who gets out-coached. He's coming in as a fairly new coach. He's going up against the most established coach in the NHL, in Paul Maurice, and he's holding his own every step of the way. He's not the guy who captivates you in the media the way that he does. But one thing I've thought in comparison to covering him last year, that one more step, that one little bit more of experience, he's a little bit more open in what he says. He's very calm and stoic in the way he says it. So it's not bombastic, and it doesn't jump up off the page the way that Paul Maurice does. But what I get in talking with him is a coach that's extremely confident. And I find that coaches that are confident are able to just outright tell you the truth rather than worry about giving away too much. So the level of confidence that he has, I'm sure, comes with the roster that he has. But the roster that he has, I think, benefits from the confidence that the coach has in them.
Not that he needed any validation for his career, that being Brad Marchand. I feel like this run has changed the way some people think about him, because everyone knew he was a great Boston Bruin. Everyone knew he was a great Boston Bruin leader and teammate and everything for that organization. But the way that he is sort of, I guess, set aside what disappointment he might have been or might have experienced when it changed for him ahead of the trade deadline, and not only fit into this Panthers team, but elevated a line, elevated a team, elevated, frankly, his own career in terms of how we view him. And when we have that conversation in earnest about the Hall of Fame, I think we've seen a change in Marshawn in some ways, but I wonder for you and in your dealings with him, if you think that he's changed the Panthers in a way that may ultimately not be the difference, but if we're talking about fractions and inches and whatever it is that's going to separate these two teams, the Brad Marchand influence here, I think, could be a huge part of the end of this story.
Yeah, yes. He's the difference in this series so far, if you ask me. From what I've seen both in Game 1 and Game 2, I thought he was their best player. He's given them an insane amount of depth. He's coming up in the very biggest moments. And I like the kind of the direction of your question in the idea of his leadership and changing the team, because that's almost a ludicrous thing to say. The Florida Panthers, who won the President's Trophy a couple of years ago, went to the Cup final the year after that, won the Cup the year after that. I don't care how great of a leader you are. It's very, very hard to walk into a room that already has what it takes to win the Cup and already has its established leaders and a deep roster of them, and to be a guy who walks in and almost seems to get to the top of that list and do so without ruffling feathers or upsetting the order and creating a little bit of chaos. Like, this guy has come in and become, you know, the little thing where they're shooting the rats at him as he gets off the ice, and the kind of fun that everyone has in the fact that all these guys hated him at one point when they played against him and now absolutely adore him. And he's just one of those guys you want to go through the wall for. I don't think that we've talked enough about how amazing it is that a guy has come onto a team like this and elevated himself to a central role on that team as a leader on a team that probably didn't need more leaders. And he's found a way to get in there without upsetting the apple cart. And on top of that, has just quite simply been their best player and, you know, is proving to be one of the best playoff performers of his generation. It is, hey, I go back to the trade deadline and I remember that trade happened at the trade deadline. I remember it was kind of like, oh, that's interesting. It wasn't, whoa, the Florida Panthers land Brad Marchand. One of the things he's changing here is the narrative that, you know, a lot of people love to say, well, the Stanley Cup isn't won at the trade deadline. If he keeps playing like this and they win, most definitely Bill Zito went out and did a good chunk of winning the Stanley Cup at the trade deadline by picking up Brad Marchand.
Yeah, and Seth Jones, like the two of those guys at the trade deadline, two quiet kind of acquisitions where we said, oh, we'll see.
It's actually ludicrous.
It's pretty amazing.
In hindsight, what they were able to accomplish out of the deadline. Yeah. You know, there was questions about both, but they have been absolute slam dunks to your point, Ayla.
I was just going to say, Sean, your speech there about Brad Marchand and changing a dynamic, like, if we clip that and we play that, if Brad Marchand comes to the Maple Leafs, it would be exactly the selling point that every Leafs fan is looking for. Hey, he changed the DNA, came in, and he was a guy that this team hated. Check. Came in with a team that needed a new leadership voice. Check. So we might save that. And if he ever decides to be a Maple Leaf, I think your little run there might be part of the reason why. We only have a couple more minutes with you, so want to get a few more in there. I just want to ask you about Florida and like, I guess the fan base. I think disrespected at times that they're like, oh, new Sun Belt fan base. Like, nobody was ever going to the games. Now they're in their third Stanley Cup final in a row. And I just wonder if, like, you've seen or heard of, like, how this is helping Florida and their fans and kind of leaning into that in a sense. I saw today that they've got the rat rally towels. Rats rule. They're kind of embracing this rat-like mentality. And I just wonder, like, what this might mean to the Florida fan base to be here now three times in a row.
Yeah, the one thing that I've noticed, you know, going around, you know, the entire league and doing games for Hockey Night in Canada is that there's really not a lot of, I can't really think of markets left. Arizona may have been that, probably the last one where it was that Northerners, us Canadians' view of hockey in the South doesn't work, right? Like, it seems to go like that everywhere. And it, you know, all those years in Tampa, I remember being blown away by what the audience was like in Tampa back in 2015, never mind the three straight times they went to the Cup. when the clock turns to 2020. So now let's be honest with ourselves. They're winning, right? So they won the President's Trophy a couple of years ago, like I said, third straight time to the Cup final. It's easy to be a fan when you're winning. So let's not overblow this here, but I was extremely impressed by the Panthers fan base last year around here. And a lot of that, you know, that a team is going for a championship, they're gonna pack the rink. So the rink isn't really where the story is. The story is outside the rink. The story is when you're staying in a hotel half an hour from the rink. The story is when you're in the elbow room that night and the local news comes on and how much, you know, you're seeing Panthers stuff on there. And the one thing that I've been surprised by, you know, especially in a market where you've got the Dolphins and baseball and all these different kind of things that are going on down here, there's massive support, and it's on things like, you know, people's license plates and things that aren't just, mm-hmm. you know, temporary, not the flag that you're sticking in your window just right now at this time of year, but people who painted their cars, you know, with Panthers logos and decals and things like that. It's kind of everywhere. And so what I'm seeing is that it's enduring, right? Like, it's not just the fact that they got here and let's get excited now. That excitement is starting to spread further and further away from the building, deeper and deeper into the community. And you're seeing those examples of it everywhere. Now, great building. I'm going to say that. I still, you know, I'm in Winnipeg. I see how the fans are there. They've been phenomenal in Edmonton. A couple of years back when the Montreal Canadiens went to the Cup final, I had the privilege of covering that. And I've said this before, nobody fans like Montreal Canadiens fans. They are just another level of it. So I've never been somewhere where I see that kind of that level. But I'll say this, first round in St. Louis, they were awful close. They were mm-hmm. outstanding. Tampa's been great when I've been there. Colorado was phenomenal when they would sing the Blink-182 songs. That sent shivers up your spine. So these are buildings that are giving you Vegas. Oh, man, in 2018, I was blown away by them in the Western Conference Final. When you can go into a building and the fans send shivers up your spine and make the hair stand up on your arms, that's a good thing. And those are experiences I get pretty consistently now. And this would be one of those places where I had that experience.
Yeah, you've got a great perspective kind of getting to see all the Barns at their best. And I'm glad that Florida is up there and delivering their end of the bargain. Sean, we'll let you go. We appreciate your time ahead of game three. Enjoy it. The rest of the series. Hopefully we get to chat soon.
Yeah, I always love being on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. That's Sean Reynolds, our Sportsnet reporter. As we mentioned, we've got game three tonight on the network, Florida and Edmonton. That's an 8 p.m. puck drop, but a 7:30 pregame show here on Sportsnet.
In game one tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays taking on the St. Louis Cardinals. Always interesting when it's not random NL team, but like it's definitely
notable NL team.
Fewer and farther between. Yes. So we'll interesting to see where the St. Louis Cardinals are at in their timeline. But the Blue Jays are coming off a great weekend, getting mm-hmm. 2-3 in the Twin Cities. And what I think is not good. You'd rather have Bowden Francis having a great start, but he's like laying it out for you pretty clearly that he's not going to be it. So if you're getting 2-3 against a team you're chasing in the wild card, and it's been underscored that, hey, we got to do something here if we're going to be serious as a serious team in a wild card position, like maybe that's the impetus to make sure that you're not going to leave anything to chance on this legitimate like postseason chase that the Blue Jays seem to be embarking on, playing really, really good baseball as of late.
Yeah, and they got Jose Berríos on the mound, which is always a great feeling if you're a Blue Jays fan. Four quality starts in a row for him, pretty much the model of consistency for that Blue Jays team. And the Jays won four consecutive series, as you mentioned, probably one of the hottest teams in baseball right now. Five games over 500. They're 8-2 in their last 10. Like, they're feeling really good. And they're 4.5 games back of the Yankees, currently tied for second in the AL East. So I will be betting on them in my best bets later in the show. I just feel the vibes.
Oh, geez. All right.
I feel the Blue Jays consistency maybe meaning something here. So we will get to that. But we'll take a quick break because I know Luke Gazdick is outside the door waiting to get in here and give us his takes on the Oilers and the Panthers series tied up going to game three tonight. So we'll take a quick break. Luke will join us in studio.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan, we just chatted with Sean Reynolds, who's getting us set down in Florida as they host Edmonton for game three. That's a 8 o'clock start on Sportsnet, but you'll get the pregame show around 7:30. And to help us wrap up that conversation, the world traveler, Luke Gazdick, who joins us in studio, obviously Sportsnet NHL, former NHLer.
You kind of look like you're traveling right now.
Traveling, man. Yeah, I guess so. I got the backpack.
Casual.
Maybe I should.
No, that's good.
Let's do the hat. Yeah.
Hey, you're not on TV for reals until a couple more hours.
So. I know. I got to suit up and
do all that
stuff
upstairs. People will see two sides of you.
I know. The before and the after. Check me out post-game with Ken and Ivanka at 11 p.m.
When you'll be wearing a suit, probably.
So you have more put together. I heard you guys in the first block.
Yeah.
So I brought you a gift.
Oh, goodness. What is it?
Well, you said.
You always bring us gifts. Like,
oh,
more socks.
It's Oiler time. So.
Oiler socks.
Wow.
Okay.
Look at this. Thanks
Dry
so much,
McDavid.
Luke.
There you guys go.
I am definitely claiming McDavid because I grew up in the same area as Connor McDavid. I've played against him in charity tournaments.
I think
you
that's
know
a
it.
Special edition.
New Market girl.
There you guys go.
I will gladly take the Connor McDavid. Sorry. Sorry, Justin. I just had to pounce.
I'm a Leon guy.
Yeah, so it worked out.
Well, you said maybe he's going to bring us socks again. And I literally had two pairs in my bag.
This is so good.
Oh, so that was
actually.
I was probably
going to
wear one of those tonight.
Stolen.
Yeah.
You can wear Leon if you want.
No, it's all good. I got more upstairs.
Thanks so much. Yeah, God, we need to. Our producer, David Siss, is in the room. We need to start giving Luke
Dave, I got to give you somebody. Sorry.
He's like,
next time.
Do you have kid sizes?
They are. I gave Dave a pair of mine, actually, and they say all sizes, but I gave Dave a pair, and they were kid size. He literally couldn't get them on.
He's probably got like pads of steel, too.
Adults.
DA and CD a little different.
Yeah, I think just the body fat.
Has like 5% body fat.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much. Well,
yeah, no problem, guys.
Our gift to you is just chatting.
Having me in here.
This
is a gift to me.
Well, since we got Leon and Connor, like, how are we feeling about the prospects of them winning a Stanley Cup? Split at home.
Yeah.
They've been brilliant. McDavid's been brilliant. These guys look like they've learned a lot from last time out. Of course, it went 7 last time. This feels like it's destined for 7, but like your thoughts on where the Oilers are at through 2 games.
It does sometimes feel like Team of Destiny a little bit. It's time for some
exciting.
Time for Connor. I just think like when they start buzzing and when they start pressuring and attacking, there's nobody like that. Like, they create chances like it's nobody's business, and they have been doing that. I think what's been really cool to observe Connor, like, I've followed the team for the Western Conference Final and was in Edmonton for the first 2 games, obviously. Like, this is different for him in the sense that he doesn't feel the pressure or the moment. I think last year he definitely did. Friedge did a great thing about showing his reaction after they beat Dallas last year, and he beat Dallas this year. And like
last year,
he's got the big smile on his face. He's selling, and like he calls this one like normal. Like, this is status quo. So his ability right now to process the game in real time the way he does and not factor in all the external is like unreal to watch. I think it's the best hockey we've ever seen him play. And typically, they've gotten better and better as the series have gone on. So I think as this goes on, they will be. But, man, this Panther team is just a freight train. Like, they do not – Game 2 is a perfect example with Florida of they have this identity that I think everyone knows how they play, right? It's forecheck in. It's going to get in hounding pucks. It's winning battles, playing good defense. And they play that way from the drop of the puck until the game is over. And I think that's been Edmonton's biggest problem is – both second periods, they've really dipped. Like, they really sagged in both seconds. They come out with this huge adrenaline burst, shot out of a cannon flying, and then there's a huge dip for them in the second period, and there never is that for Florida. Florida just maintains, and that's how they get you. They just wear you down. But I'm glad the series is 1-1 because I said this on whatever day it was after Game 2 that I think the series deserves to be. I think either of those teams, this could be 2-0 either way. So I think it deserves to be a split, and we're in for another treat tonight. But what I'm seeing is two teams that are clearly, so clearly above and beyond the rest of the teams that
that's what I was going to ask you next.
Are
these two teams going to do this until the end of time? Because they are... I mean, watching these two teams, I was thinking like, okay, who could be actually on this stage against one of them next year? I can't come up with anyone. Like, I don't think any team is even close to these two.
I think there's a couple knocking
just do it
at the door. Yeah, and I really thought Dallas was knocking on the door.
But it's
they don't even have a head coach anymore.
Now
so.
They don't have a head coach. Like, Jake Oettinger obviously hasn't played as well as he has in the finals. But, yes, like, I don't see – like, there's teams knocking on the doors, but I don't see anyone close. And I watched a lot of hockey this year. Like, it's all I essentially did. And I think fans know this too. Like, these two teams are just so above and beyond everybody else in their conference.
We didn't see this from either of them either throughout the balance of the regular season. Then you see them match up against each other. It's like, oh, they both have like this different level that no one else can.
Yeah. And what I think is cool about this one is it's the same teams, but there's a bunch of new faces on either team that are like huge parts of the series. But yeah, for the most part, like what I'm watching is two teams beating the hell out of each other, and there is no room out there. Like, there's no room on the ice. When guys have pucks to make plays, it is, there's a guy on top of you, someone's checking, whatever, and they're still finding ways through. They scored 9 goals last game. Like, there's nowhere to go on the ice, and they still find the offensive prowess to score 9 goals between the two teams. So I'm not taking this away from anyone watching on TV, but I do love that I was there for the first two, because watching this thing live, like, the speed and the pace and the intensity that they're playing at is like nothing I've ever seen in the game of hockey.
So Ryan Nugent-Hopkins might not be in the lineup tonight. Like, what happens? What's the trickle effect? I think both these teams have great depth, which has been a really nice storyline, but he's a huge part of this Oilers offense and just like leadership core in general.
Yeah, leadership core. And I think where this really hurts them is in the circle. They have not been doing well in the circle through the first two games, and they've been getting dominated because they haven't. And they didn't address it. I mean, they called Derek Ryan back up, but they don't have a right-handed shot center option, so they roll all their lefties. They do have more options of guys to take draws and play some center, but they're all lefties. So he can bring in a guy like Derek Ryan if he wants to help through the middle, but obviously, like, there's nothing against DR, but going from RNH to Derek Ryan, you know the difference, right? I just think Nuge means a lot in that dressing room. I think he's going to end up finding a way to play. Mm-hmm. That guy is a pain threshold like I haven't seen in a long time, and I think he's going to be good to go tonight.
Okay. Expected to take warm-up, game-time decision. I won't say we'll usually, see. But yeah. You know, that's probably a good sign that he'll be able to go. Pain pending, I suppose. The Oilers made some news, I guess, or Chris Knobloch did, by mixing up the pairings in advance of this game. What does it tell you when it looks like the entire blue line goes into a bit of a blender? We'll see what it actually looks like, but they made some suggestions that it's going to be looking a lot different on the back end.
They'll believe it when I see it. I think it might be a bit of a smokescreen, but knowing like Chris Knobloch, if you follow the Oilers throughout the whole year, he literally said in his media this morning that this team is comfortable with the changes I make because we do it so often. Mm-hmm. There was not a lot of stability throughout the year for injuries and wanting to try out different line combinations, but he mixed it up a lot. The only thing I didn't really love is I love Ekholm and Bush together, and I have loved Jake Walman and John Klingberg together. Mm-hmm. Breakout machines. Anytime you have to put a defenseman on his offside, I just don't love that. I don't care how much experience he has there. I don't care if he would prefer to play there. Like, whether it's Brett or it's Jake, those two guys have had a ton of experience doing that, and if Walman has to do it tonight, he will, but I never like putting a guy on his offside. I played the wing. I didn't want to play the right side. Like, it makes the position even harder than it already is. And from watching them, the way they played the first two games, they're a machine as a pair. So I listened to Freeze, and he thinks it might be a bit of a smokescreen as well. I'm leaning that way a bit. So I'll believe it when I see it in period one. Yeah, maybe we're getting into a bit of the gamesmanship. Right. Like, I really don't know. So if not, then I think it's just Knobloch wanting to mix some things up.
I'm glad you mentioned Knobloch. We talked about it a little bit with Sean Reynolds, but I wanted to just ask you about, like, how underrated he has been in this story, because he was hired, obviously, we know, like, November 2023, and look what he's done for this team. And he's not Paul Maurice or John Cooper or Rod Brind'Amour. Like, nobody really talks about Chris Knobloch, but, like, he deserves, I think, a lot of credit or a lot of appreciation for being able to get this team walking in where he did without the most experience. And they seem to respond really well to him. He seems to know which buttons to press, but he's very under-discussed character in this whole story.
What I love about Chris is you don't see him over-coaching at all. There's not a ton of overt emotion on the bench or even like watching behind-the-scenes stuff. He doesn't seem like a guy that's coming in and just tearing a strip off these guys. I've been watching them off the ice on their off days, on their practices, on their game day skates. Yeah. And this is going to be tough to say. I was going to say there's not a ton of coaching or teaching at this time of the year. There probably isn't, but he kind of just goes out there and lets these guys do their thing. And when you have two of the best players in hockey, I think how can you not? You give them a guideline, and then you allow them the ability to be creative and the ability to make plays. I don't think you can tell Connor all the time what he should have done on this play or that play. But if you want to give him some, you know, some attention on the power play or whatever that is, or show him he has a seam somewhere, maybe. But that's what I've really liked about him. He has the ability to find and plug in line combinations, D pairs, in-game matchups, great at getting the right guys out when he needs to. I don't know when and where you would want to put McDavid and Draisaitl together. Like, if you were a coach, if you guys are on the bench, like, I'm sure I would want to do it all the time. But he picks the right moments. And I think in game one, with about 17 to go in the third, that was his time when he was like, all right, we're going to stack it up and go nuclear here. He doesn't do it always, you know, picks his spots. But I just think he has great game and bench management and just a calm guy. And I think that that flows down onto your bench. When you have a coach that's screaming and yelling and he's at the ref, then you have guys barking at the ref, like, you pick up a lot from your head coach. And I think his demeanor really trickles down for the group.
Luke Gazdick in studio will be on with Ken and Ivanka after game three of the Stanley Cup final tonight, Edmonton and Florida 1-1. Of course, the assist in game two does not help an Oiler victory, but when we talk about the assist, everyone knows what we're
talking
about. Helps
our highlight reels forever.
Yeah, it will. And McDavid's, you know, highlight tape for his career and Hall of Fame highlight tape, all the things. But where would you put that assist? Just like in a single McDavid moment on the pantheon of many McDavid moments. Is that like one of his finest moments in the history of his career?
It has to be. I mean, yeah, top three maybe. If you consider the moment, the time of the game, the score, the time in his career, like, Aaron Ekblad was a really good sport about it, and he kind of put it as well as anyone can. Like, he's defending on the power play. So their first, the overtime winner in game one, he goes down low to Perry. So he's like, I have to defend that pass. I have to defend him shooting, and I have to defend the backside to Draisaitl. And so he's like, I'm in like no man's land coming out. I'm just imagining that too. Like, I didn't even play defense, but coming out, you have the best player in the world, you know, coming downhill at you, stick your stick out. And like, I lean into what I said earlier, his ability to process the game in real time as it's happening is like nobody else that I've ever seen or met. Like, I've my very first hockey night, I've always told that story about him breaking down the goal against Columbus after he broke his collarbone, where he goes end to end. That might actually be number one, that goal, that end to end versus the Jackets. But the way he was explaining it to me and what he looks for and what he sees as he's carrying the puck up the ice, like, I'm staring at laces, not trying to turn pucks over. And I think a lot of guys are. And so for him to be able to see his options, know his options, but to be able to, you know, absolutely undress one of probably the best defensemen in the game, he continues to impress.
It was like you at our charity tournament.
It was just like that. It was me at the charity tournament.
I was going to say, I've seen it before.
Remember Barkov and Ekblad weren't on the ice. It was Gazdick and those kids from Blue Jays talk or whatever it was.
Blue Jays talk. Yes, exactly.
I want to ask you about what the role of someone like Zach Hyman would be right now. Obviously, heart and soul of his team, can't be in the lineup, dealing with his surgery and recovery, but man, you know he wants to be there. Like, would he be there? Would he be FaceTiming the boys? Is he going to Florida? How much of a loss is that? And how much can he be involved?
He's got to go to Florida.
Great question,
right?
If he's going to Florida. I would assume he's in Florida like 100% or as close to as possible. When I've seen him, he's been up in the press box with their scratches involved, not hiding in any way, which I think is cool. Like, I had a couple good chats with him.
What'd he say?
Pretty cool. I mean, I asked him if he needs someone for his golf tournament this summer. He said, sure. So
there you go.
I actually thought about the other day.
You're going to weasel in there. Nice.
Well, Amber was talking about on TV. I said, Himes, if you need someone for your tourney, like, and he's just like, down, come on. So I guess I'm going to his golf tourney now.
Nice.
But I have a lot of admiration for him in the way he's like not hiding from this at all. He's sitting up there, smiling his face. It's probably killing him. But then you see the videos, like, he's down there giving the boys dabs right after they win. So I'm sure he's going to want to be there as much as he can. And it sucks because, like, even if you're a fan of hockey, he's tailor-made for this series. Tailor-made for this seven, for whatever you want to call it, six or seven games, whatever this is going. He would fit right into this perfectly. Yeah. So I'm sure it's killing him as much as it's killing hockey fans watching.
In many ways, he could be the Oilers' Sam Bennett, a guy who could score goals, create some havoc in front of the net, but there's only one Sam Bennett in this series, and he's having a profound impact on this series. If you're the Oilers, like, what do you do? He was penalized in game two, clearly. He still scores a goal. Yeah. He's got three in the series so far. So I guess the refs are taking care of some of it, but, like, the way Stuart Skinner like maybe just avoided injury. Like I don't really know what the best practices are here. What do you do about Sam Bettinger?
It's going to be tough for me to say because it's like I'm watching Matthias Ekholm trying to box him out. Like what am I going to do different than Matthias Ekholm? I just think they got to get behind him. He's getting behind them all the time, and that's how. And it's tough because when you're in front, when you're the forward in front for a net front shot, a lot of defensemen won't spend all their time and energy trying to push you and box you out and lift your stick. They'll just wait for the shot, and then it's the subtle push or it's a stick under. So a guy like Ekholm doesn't care if Bennett sneaks in behind him because as soon as they see that shot coming in, that's when he's going to start his box out. But now Bennett's just falling backwards. So it's like he has mastered the art of, you know, being a rat in front of the net. I would be more physical on him too. That's probably the one thing I think they can do better. I think they know that. Like, I think if they get a couple clean licks at him, you cannot be passing a lick on nine. That's like first and foremost. But he has the ability right now, like what I'm seeing, to tilt the ice in Florida's favor every time he gets out there. He was their number one center in faceoffs. He went 10-5, 67%. He had four hits, which was low for him. And he makes a difference every time he's on the ice. Like, he does something. He wins a battle. He makes a play. Every time you see him, his head's up. He's ready to make a play. And then as soon as that play happens, he's driving the slot right to the net. Like, it's so predictable. But he is going to be and is turning a lot of heads, I think, for the way he's playing because he's doing everything. And he helps that team a lot.
How close to Sam Bennett level of protagonist is Brad Marchand in this story? Like, are they character A and B? Is there a little bit of gap between
them? Yeah, they're 1A, 1B.
It's pretty unbelievable what Marchand's been
able
to do.
They're just, it's every face-off, it's like a little shot. And I'm not down there ice level, so I'm sure they're chirping as well, and I'm sure it doesn't stop the whole game. Yeah. I think the biggest instigator or antagonizer that Marchand has been is being like an off, like those two goals yesterday, a couple days ago, just absolutely shut that team down. Like, you get the opportunity to go on a power play and Brad Marchand sneaks behind you. And then again in overtime, just with that fake Bouchard to the wall on the inside, like he is playing the antagonizer, but he's also like one of the most clutch players we've ever seen. Like, there is no moment too big for this guy. It's unbelievable. Like, just soaks it in. And I kind of mentioned this after the game in Edmonton and after game two, like, we're down and around the rink and it is very cool to watch those two guys. And when I say those two, it's him and Perry, the two oldest players.
Yeah. It's a good night for the old guys.
They are like, it's like they're at the beginning of their careers again, like smile from ear to ear, off the ice, walking around, like just like shoulders back. And it's cool to watch. They're just having the time of their life. Stanley Cup finals at the ages there are. And for either of them, not a moment too big.
If you're any team that wants to get better this offseason, are you not doing everything you can to get Brad Marchand? Like, like we watched the Four Nations.
Or Sam Bennett.
Sam Bennett's a little bit different because it's such
it's
a long-term commitment. But this Marchand thing, Four Nations, it looked like, okay, this is like a notch above. But that was maybe the most talented hockey game that you could ever put together on planet Earth right now. And he played in it. And now in this series, which is the highest level in the NHL you can get, he's not dominating, but he's in the group that's having a massive, massive influence on this game. We know what he's like in terms of his ability in the room, his leadership, the effect he has on others. Like, I feel like any team that's serious about being better or being different has to take a run at him.
Yeah, and I think what's been really cool about Marshy is that he's perennially been a top-line left winger, top-line winger. He's playing on the third line with the two Finns, with Luostarinen and Lundell. He's playing a checking role. He's playing against top players. He's killing a ton of penalties. Like, he's expanded his role into just, like, I was trying to figure out, like, when they traded for him, where are they going to, are they going to put him in the top six with Barkey or, like, with somebody like that? And he slides down to a third-line checking role and is consistently contributing. So he is going to help somebody out a lot. I think it has to be the right fit, but yes, I don't know if it's Florida.
What wouldn't be the right fit?
Well, obviously,
you don't have to
like,
name name, but like what type of situation?
Well, obviously, someone that's not
like
in a contending role.
Yeah.
That's first and foremost.
What are the Oilers?
I mean, that'd be sweet.
He would fit in like a glove with the Oilers. Yeah. Just someone like that. I think he has the ability to put a team that's right there over the edge with the experience that he brings in the room and the player that he's shown he still is on the ice.
Any problem with the game being tonight and then Thursday? Like a lot of dialogue about it. A couple extra days.
I told Sis I thought it was today. I said I can come into studio Monday and Wednesday because that's when the games
are. I thought
it
would be Wednesday too. So an extra day off. You know, if you're a player and tonight someone's going to be up 2-1, like you're going to have that momentum. You got to wait till Thursday. You're in Florida. You're trying not to get distracted, hit the beach, go golfing, but you need to, you know, decompress. You got an extra day off. Like, what are you supposed to do?
The more and more I talk to these guys and listen to these guys, Chris Knobloch said it in the media yesterday, mm-hmm. that momentum is non-existent. And if that's a Jedi mind trick, then maybe it is, but he says it has no effect on the game whatsoever mm-hmm. for them. Multiple players have said that the same way too. I always thought it had an effect, but I also think that any amount of rest in any series is good for these guys. I think these two teams are so good that we deserve to see them at full strength and at full health. So if there's any injuries being dealt with or whatever, they get an extra day and we get to see the cream of the crop continually from game to game.
Okay, we only have 3 minutes, so you can sit here and do our best bet segment with us if you'd like.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Do you have any best bets?
Oh, wow.
Give me something.
Okay, well, here. We'll
bounce ours off Luke.
Well, okay.
That's a great idea.
Luke has to pick one of our bets.
Okay.
Well, there's a number of players on each team that have 0 goals and 0 points. Oh, so there's some guys that I think might.
I'll get it up. I'll get the lines up, and Luke's on the fly best bet can be a part of it. What I'm going to bet, and I don't know if it's actually a bet, but I just want to present it to our listeners, is overtime plus 340. If this game is...
Why is that not a bet?
Well, okay.
What else?
You know, then let's do it.
Regulation win?
Every game has gone to overtime. The margins are extremely thin. I was listening to Sammy on Real Kipper and Bourne mentioning how important game three is. I forget the stats exactly, but it's like a 70% win rate. If you win game three, you win the Stanley Cup if it goes to seven. And I just looked at, you know, how much this game's going to mean to both teams. Why not? A little plus 340 for overtime. So I found that one. You like it? We get a thumbs up from Luke. My next one is just going to the Blue Jays game. We talked about this a little earlier. Jays plus money tonight. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball. We talked about it. 8-2 in their last 10. Plus 105 tonight. I also like the over. The over's hitting 9 out of 10 of their last games. The Cardinals as well. I think 8 out of their last 10 games. So I'm loving the Blue Jays and maybe the over tonight. But it is Brio, so I'm maybe not feeling as much. I like Brios to have a good game.
Okay, you said game three is important.
Yeah.
I think the Oilers are going to win the series, so I'm going to take the Oilers plus 120. It's not just because of the importance of game three, though. I just think mm-hmm. that this is like 50-50. And if it's plus 120 then I'm just going to play plus 120s on both sides because I think it's going seven and the value will always be on the underdog. And here's like a little bit more of a longer shot. Evan Bouchard is 1 point behind Connor McDavid for the series lead in points. He's been on the ice for 7 of Edmonton's 8 goals so far. He's in on everything, it seems, for the Edmonton Oilers. He's 11-1 to lead the series in scoring. So if he can just be around all the McDavid goals.
He's second in points per game all time behind Bobby Orr.
Yeah. So I like Evan Bouchard just to get one more than McDavid when it's all said and done.
Okay, what's Luke liking?
I like the Jays. The Jays in St. Louis.
Okay.
That's the one. Plus money.
That's yours? Okay, Luke is on the
Blue Jays. You said there's some guys who haven't factored in the series yet,
though. Who needs to show up tonight?
I mean, Barkov eventually is going to... Barkov's going to play a factor tonight somehow. 0 points.
Plus 230 anytime goal for Barkov.
Like, there's one. Right. Okay. I just think he's not going to continue to go bagels across the board for too long.
One thing I heard someone else say that I didn't really act on was if you think it's going to be a long series, and I did, just bet a bunch of guys to get 2-plus goals.
Yeah.
And it's like everyone's going to have the opportunity to do that because, like, Evander Kane, 2-plus goals is like 2-1. Like, you just go down the line.
That guy in the socks in front of you, yeah.
Leon Draisaitl. Yeah. He was minus money, but he's already got his 2.
Yeah,
but you already cashed that one if you picked Leon Draisaitl to score 2-plus. Maybe you have to go 3.
Who's your Conn Smythe winner right now if Florida wins the Stanley Cup?
Oh,
you have 60 seconds.
Probably still Connor.
Wow, you think really? They do it again?
Okay, yeah, okay. We only have 60 seconds.
Damn.
My take on that is that's the most disrespectful thing the media could possibly do is give it to him twice in a row for two reasons.
That'd be so spicy.
For Florida and for McDavid. You think he wants
I really get that point, to be honest. That's a great take. Yeah.
Like, let him win it and win it.
Tell DA not to let that
Florida
happen.
Florida would not win this series without Bobrovsky. Mm-hmm. And so I would probably give it to Bob. He had 18 high danger saves last game.
Good.
Of his 42. He's a monster.
Well, Justin and I can probably retire if Dan Bennett wins it. So,
yeah.
We're heavily invested in
Marchand.
He looked good in blue. He looked great in blue and white.
All right, we got to go. Thanks so much for coming on, Luke.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We will see you after the game. with Kenneth Ivanka.
Kenneth Ivanka post game.
So he's on before game time.
Thanks to everyone.
Let's go.
And Justin and I will be back on the radio in 5 minutes. We'll see you there too.